From ABC News, World News This Week. I'm Lou Adler, ABC News. Listen.
Neither UNPROFOR nor NATO will tolerate the use of air power from those bases that threaten United Nations forces or the safer.
I think the personal talk about President Clinton is unfortunate.
The American people clearly said that we have had it with Washington.
The kids wanted to go up and see the snow, and unfortunately, we're stuck here.
We are as safe in every way as we possibly can be.
The people and events that made headlines when World News This Week continues.
Hi, David Garner again, president of Connect Long Distance. And I've just taken a phone call from a Mr. Pete Warren, who owns a small but thriving office supply company right on the border of Indiana and Illinois. Now, even though most of his best customers are right across the street, due to a fluke of arcane zoning laws and geography, he can only reach them by making out-of-state long-distance calls. As you can imagine, the expense is really killing him. In fact, he's concerned that he might have to pack up his company and move across the street to Illinois. Well, I assured him that if he switched over to Connect, we could save him up to 20% on his long-distance bills. And with those kinds of savings, he'd be able to stay right where he is. Of course, with our nationwide fiber optic technology, his customers will think he's calling them from right across the street, which in this case, he is. So if you're a small business person, give us a call at 1-800-LONG-DISTANCE. That's 1-800-LONG-DISTANCE. See, we're saving you money already.
Air raid sirens over Bosnia this week as the situation in that shattered country became what radio commentator Paul Harvey called a quagmire. From available reports, it appears Bosnian Serb forces stepped up attacks against the UN-declared safe haven of Bihać. Observers at the scene said Serb capture of the northwestern Bosnian city seemed imminent. So UN commanders asked NATO to bring in airstrikes, and NATO complied. ABC's Tony Bertley reported from nearby Vitez.
About 30 NATO aircraft representing a variety of nations, including the US, French, British, and Dutch, have launched airstrikes on the Udbina base. That's in the Serb-held area in Croatia. This is the base from which the Serbs have launched three attacks in the last few days on the safe haven of Bihać, which is now under siege by a combination of Croatian and Bosnian Serb forces.
Bosnian Prime Minister Haris Salazic praised the NATO attack.
The NATO attack on the airport Udbine proves that in Bosnia we do not have a civil war, that Bosnia-Herzegovina is now being attacked across the border from Croatia by the Serbs from Croatia.
But it turned out that NATO had only attacked the runway of the airport in Croatia, not the planes, not the Serb forces that flew them, or the facilities that maintained them. NATO Commander Admiral Leighton Smith insisted that such limited airstrikes should be enough to scare off the Serbs.
The principal purpose was to ensure that we send a very strong signal to those factions involved with conducting the strikes that neither UNPROFOR nor NATO will tolerate the use of air power from those bases that threaten United Nations forces or the SAFER.
Secretary of State Warren Christopher agreed.
NATO military authorities had a carefully defined military mission. They carried out that mission successfully. I think they've shown that they can do that, and they can do it again if it's necessary.
But Senator Bob Dole of Kansas, likely to be Senate Majority Leader next year, disagreed.
The UN ought to get off of NATO's back and let NATO take care of the Serbian aggression in Bosnia. You know, how many times can we waffle on Bosnia? How many thousands of people or innocent children have to be killed before NATO does something? I'm going to visit NATO next week and tell them that I don't see any reason for their existence.
And indeed, the strike against Croatia failed to scare off the Serbs. By Thursday, they were shelling Bihać again. Once again, the jets were in the sky, as ABC's Chris Simon reported from Sarajevo.
The jets were called in by the UN force commander to answer repeated Bosnian Serb shelling attacks on the Bihać safe area. In pairs, NATO fighters thundered over the Bihać area as well as frontline positions to the south of the pocket. However, after failing to acquisition suitable targets, the jets were called back to their bases and carriers. Bosnian Serb television broadcast told a different story, naming specific strike positions. A reporter claimed the attack was brutal and even took out a school, all part of an anti-Western campaign designed to rally public opinion behind the tattered image of the Bosnian Serb leadership.
By week's end, the United States appeared resigned to stepping up its visibility around Bosnia, according to Pentagon spokesman Major Tom LaRock.
The units of the USS Nassau, Mediterranean Amphibious Ready Group, have been directed to shorten their scheduled port visit to Toulon, France, and proceed to the Adriatic Sea, where they will be available, if needed, to support UN, NATO, and U.S. military personnel in the area. The move, which is strictly precautionary, is a prudent measure to enhance the capability of our forces supporting the UN, given the continuing hostilities in the area.
As the bullets flew over Bosnia, the verbal missiles continued to emanate from Washington, where the Republicans prepared to end 40 years of Democratic congressional power. One cannon, some said a very loose one, was Senator Jesse Helms of North Carolina, slated to become chairman of the powerful Foreign Relations Committee. On Tuesday, Helms told a reporter, in jest he later said, that President Clinton was so unpopular among the military that he should bring a bodyguard if he wanted to visit the Tar Heel state. That brought an immediate comment from White House Chief of Staff Leon Panetta.
Those comments really, just frankly, don't reflect, I think, the mainstream of what this country is about.
Even Helms' fellow Republican, Senator Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania, thought his colleague had gone overboard.
I think the personal talk about President Clinton is unfortunate. He is our commander-in-chief for the next 2 years plus, and I think we owe respect to the office of the president, and we owe respect to the commander-in-chief.
Jesse Helms is a senator, of course, because the people of North Carolina elected him to that office. But Helms apologized for his remarks after hearing comments like these from his home state.
I think that's a terrible thing to say. I think it's very unprofessional and unethical to say.
That's beyond comprehension that anybody would talk to that, like in that manner, about a president of our country. And especially coming from supposedly a senator.
It's too bad that Jesse Helms has such hatred in him to make comments like that to our president.
By week's end, Democrats were calling on the Republican caucus to bypass Helms as committee chairman. President Clinton took the high road.
I think the remarks were unwise and inappropriate. The president oversees the foreign policy of the United States, and the Republicans will decide in whom they will repose their trust and confidence. That's a decision for them to make, not for me.
Speaking of President Clinton, Whitewater. Remember Whitewater? You may have forgotten about it, but the newly powerful Republicans remember. And as ABC's Michelle Norris reported this week, the investigation is moving along.
Independent counsel Kenneth Starr is seeking cooperation from a key player in the Whitewater probe instead of bringing an immediate indictment. Starr is planning to send a so-called target letter to James McDougal, President Clinton's former partner in the failed Whitewater real estate venture. Sources close to the Whitewater probe say the letter will inform McDougal that he could face criminal charges if he does not cooperate with the investigation.
McDougal in Little Rock said he fully expects to be in court.
Mr. Rehnquist and Senator Helms appointed this fellow Starr and sent him here with a specific charge to get me indicted. And he spent $several million, and I'm sure you'll be able to do it.
But McDougal scornfully dismissed the Whitewater investigators.
The minute we get the jackleg government lawyers out of it, and these right-wing nut Republican politicians like Rehnquist and Helms get it before an Arkansas jury, they'll take about 20 minutes to acquit me.
Other than investigating Democrats, what do the Republicans want to do when they take power in 1995? According to Senator Phil Graham of Texas, they want to stop the bickering and end government gridlock.
I do not believe that the American people, for the first time in 40 years, elected a Republican majority to both houses of Congress so that we could suddenly start acting like Democrats.
Simplify the tax system, urged Representative Bill Archer of Texas, who is expected to have the power to do just that as incoming chairman of the Ways and Means Committee.
It takes 42 questions to answer whether or not you're the head of a household under our current tax system. Something is really wrong.
In Williamsburg, Virginia, which once echoed with Patrick Henry's "Give me liberty or give me death" speech, Republican governors heard host Governor George Allen again call for liberty, but not from London, from Washington.
On this past election day, the American people clearly said that we have had it with Washington.
Governor John Engler of Michigan got specific.
We're working on unfunded mandates, on welfare reform, on curbing the role of the federal judiciary, on a balanced budget amendment, on a whole host of economic issues. If we don't deal with the economic issues, we'll need more than prayer to solve our problems.
Senator Bob Dole predicted a whole host of federal departments will go out of business.
The Interstate Commerce Commission, the Energy Department, there are a whole host of them that we're going to be looking at.
Much of the attention focused on Representative Newt Gingrich of Georgia, expected to become the next Speaker of the House. Gingrich enunciated what's coming to be called the New Federalism, a demand for a smaller federal government.
I sense on everything from unfunded mandates to returning a great deal of responsibility to the states to very significant reduction in power in Washington and shift back home, and frankly, reduction in resources in Washington, that there could be some very bold changes.
Since the days of the Great Depression, the federal government has been the engine that moved social progress. So what's wrong with it now? Wisconsin Governor Tommy Thompson.
They think that they can sit there in their omnipotent style and come up with one solution that's going to be the same for Minnesota and Wisconsin as it is for California and Florida. It just doesn't wash.
Many Republicans are focusing their attacks on entitlements, specifically the host of programs collectively called welfare, the programs that provide food, homes, and other assistance to people who can't support themselves. Congressman Charles Rangel of New York said government cannot end welfare unless it can provide something better.
The federal government's responsibility is not to make it more difficult for these people to enter the workforce. How are you going to threaten an unemployable person to get a job? I mean, what are they going to do when the jobs are not there?
But Doug Besheroff of the Conservative American Enterprise Institute in Washington says government can do better. State and local government, freed of federal regulations.
It empowers the states to take hold of these programs and try to shape them for local conditions. And secondly, it says to the poor, instead of giving you these coupons, which you have to hand up to the person at the supermarket and be kind of embarrassed about, we're going to give you cash.
Enough of economic policy. Americans celebrated Thanksgiving this week in New York, where the giant balloons made it down Broadway pretty much intact. In Philadelphia, where the mummers turned out at a shopping mall, and in homes across this nation where families gathered to give thanks and celebrate. 3-year-old Caroline Rowley of Fairfax, Virginia, spoke for most of us.
My mom and dad and my family and the talkie.
President Clinton, celebrating with his family at Camp David, recalled watching his late mother cheering on her favorite football team shortly before she died.
I looked at my mother, I looked at my daughter, I looked at my wife, and I knew what Thanksgiving was all about. I hope every one of you today has a chance to enjoy this day and to know what Thanksgiving is all about.
Around the nation, we remembered those who have little to be thankful for. In Springfield, Massachusetts, inmates from the county jail cook the annual community Thanksgiving dinner, served free to anyone who wants to come. These people did.
We're new to the neighborhood, we're new to the city, and we just wanted to help. I was so proud the girls came up with the idea, and I'm just delighted with them.
Most rewarding thing I ever done in my life.
A lot of people are having hard times, and it just makes you feel a little bit better.
Okay, happy Thanksgiving.
In the shadow of the nation's capital, some 3,000 homeless people showed up for dinner. Lois Mitchell speaks for the agency that cooked it.
Preparation started about 3 days ago. We've been cooking nonstop. We have approximately about 500 volunteers, and we expect to feed 3,000 today.
And inside the Los Angeles jail, O.J. Simpson joined his fellow inmates for a traditional turkey dinner and perhaps a football game, although his Buffalo Bills lost their game to the Detroit Lions. Outside the jail, Simpson's lawyers continued their battle with prosecutors. ABC's Greg Jarrett reports.
A week shortened by the Thanksgiving holiday to just 2 days was packed, nonetheless, with juicy Simpson tidbits. Though alternate jury selection continued, a hint that Judge Lancito might be involved in a conflict of interest because his police captain wife once supervised one of the homicide detectives working on the Simpson case dominated the week, along with mudslinging between the defense and prosecution and the police. The selection process for alternate jurors slowed, even though Judge Ito adhered to a time limit and promised an even stricter one. The fact that few want to be alternates became even more obvious. Linda Deutsch watches the process for us.
The last day of alternate jury selection before the Thanksgiving holiday has yielded us only one alternate juror who was passed for cause.
It had been suggested by the defense that Judge Ito's wife, Captain Peggy York, might be called as a witness because she supervised Mark Furman when he was a patrolman and when he was investigated for belonging to a group, Men Against Women. A hearing into the matter was put on hold till mid-December by Judge Curtis Rappe.
To the extent that the defense wishes to raise issues regarding Captain York's potential as a witness, the defense has requested additional time to file a motion. Is that correct, Mr. Spiro?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you indicate that you could file that motion by next Tuesday?
If it is decided York may be called as a witness, her husband would have to step off the bench in the case unless both sides agree to keep him. She made a statement for Judge Rappe in which York indicates she had nothing to do with an investigation into Furman's activities and that she found him to be a productive officer. Meanwhile, the chief of police, Willie Williams, is quoted as saying the defense is using slimy tactics in attacks on the police and coroner's office policies. Defense lawyer Johnny Cochran was angered.
We haven't attacked any individuals. We just looked at what the facts are, John. And as I said, the truth hurts.
Court is in recess until Tuesday. Greg Jarrett, ABC News, Los Angeles.
With leftover turkey safely stashed in the refrigerator, it was time for shopping in Wichita.
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, you complain all week about having to get up early to be at work by 8, and then, you know, at 6:30, you've got to be at Kmart for the blue light special. You know, there's something wrong with that.
And in Florida, people wanted just one toy, according to store manager Frank Cusimano.
Power Rangers, we had about 1,000 pieces, and we've got about 100 left. That's it.
What were they buying in Milwaukee?
Electronics for the kids, CD players, Nintendo games for my son.
Toys. Barbies, Etch-a-Sketch. Socks, 10-pack for $4.44. Flannel shirts, some cake pans.
And a sour note in that city. The Salvation Army's Ken Shields reports that even though the giving season has only just begun, the stealing season is in full swing.
We've had 5 kettles stolen in the first week of bell ringing. And that's pretty unusual. We anticipate that we're going to lose 1, possibly 2 during the season. But for 5 to be stolen in the first week is very alarming.
As Christmas nears, so does the threat of severe weather. It's more than a threat in the upper Midwest, where a couple of blizzards have already swept across the plains. And in California's High Sierra, travelers were stranded when authorities suddenly closed a major highway. This man only wanted his children to see the snow.
The kids wanted to go up and see the snow, and unfortunately, we're stuck here.
The traffic eventually moved out of California's mountains, but in some places, as we all know, traffic hardly ever moves. A survey this week indicated that, to no one's surprise, Los Angeles has the nation's worst traffic problems, and most other major cities are not far behind. How's the driving in, say, Miami?
The traffic is always backed up.
It takes you twice as long to get to where you're going when you're going to Miami.
Too hectic.
The worst. Bumper to bumper.
In the skies overhead, there were also traffic questions this week and safety questions. There were reports this week that passengers aboard U.S. Air Flight 427, which crashed near Pittsburgh in September, heard a strange sound in the cabin before the crash. The sound was tentatively identified as nothing more threatening than an open microphone in the cockpit. And at week's end, federal officials investigating that crash were looking at the rudders of Boeing 737s as a possible reason for that crash. This week, U.S. Air took out newspaper ads to announce a vigorous new safety campaign. Spokesman Mike Clark said a retired Air Force officer, General Robert Oakes, was appointed to conduct a no-holds-barred safety investigation of the airline.
We've also asked a team of aviation experts to conduct a complete and independent audit of the company's practices and policies so that we can reassure both ourselves and everybody else that we are as safe in every way as we possibly can be.
As always, crime was on the nation's mind this week, perhaps nowhere more than in Washington, D.C., where a gunman, intent on revenge, stormed into the city's police station. D.C. Police Chief Fred Thomas told us what happened.
It appears that as many as 3 men entered the office of the Homicide Branch Cold Case Squad, which is located on the 3rd floor of the Metropolitan Police Department headquarters. Shortly thereafter, gunfire erupted in the squad room. Consequently, 6 persons were shot, 4 of whom were fatally wounded.
And in Philadelphia, controversy over what may have been a botched police response to an emergency. Reporter Tom McDonald fills us in.
10 calls were made within a half hour to the Philadelphia 911 operators, people frantically pleading to send police to a church where a young boy was being beaten to death. Dispatchers were short and at times abusive to the callers.
Was that it? Wait a minute, you asked me
me, and I'm asking you. I have the information. You can hang up now.
Mayor Ed Rendell is promising an overhaul of the system. Police officials say they're conducting an investigation into the incident and will not comment. Tom McDonald for ABC News, Philadelphia.
Unrest continued in Gaza, the new Palestinian-ruled enclave on the shores of the Mediterranean, as militant residents protested a crackdown by the Palestine Liberation Organization. That unrest may also have been provoked by the sentencing of a terrorist in Israel this week. ABC's Dean Reynolds reports.
The April 13th attack on the bus in the northern Israeli town of Hadera killed six people, including the suicide bomber. On Thursday, the man who planned the attack was brought into an Israeli military court and sentenced to death. Unless the sentence is overturned on appeal, 24-year-old Saeed Badarne, a Hamas activist from the West Bank, will become only the second person ever executed by Israel. Nazi war criminal Adolf Eichmann was the first. A Hamas spokesman vowed revenge for the court's decision, and Palestinian human rights activists said it was really a response to the Israeli public's desire for revenge. Dean Reynolds, ABC News, Tel Aviv.
Usually on this program, we review what happened this week, but now we're reporting on something that did not happen. The U.S. Post Office did not go on strike just in time for the holidays, although it couldn't reach contract agreements with three unions. Postal Service spokesman Frank Brennan told us why.
Postal employees are prohibited from law, by law, from striking. And throughout these business-like negotiations, there's been no talk at all of any kind of work slowdown or work stoppage.
Two very different kinds of salutes when World News This Week continues.
Picture a playground filled with four-year-old children. Picture each face so full of promise. Well, which child deserves to be read to? This one? Or is it that one over there? Which child will get a hot lunch? Who will have a chance to sing? The choice is yours. Volunteer for Head Start. With your help, more low-income preschool children can get what other children already have. Call 1-800-27-START for more information and a brochure on volunteer opportunities with Head Start in your community. Change the world of a child, and you change the world.
Brought to you by Head Start, Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Mourners gathered at Arlington National Cemetery in Washington this week, saluting the life of Lieutenant Kara Hultgreen, the first Navy female combat pilot to die in the course of duty. ABC's John Bascom attended the funeral.
In a steady November rain, Navy pallbearers now lift the flag-draped casket of Navy Lieutenant Kara Hultgreen from the black caisson that brought it to her final resting place here in Arlington National Cemetery. Lieutenant Hultgreen was a pioneer, one of the first women chosen to combat fighters off an aircraft carrier. And she was the first to die as her F-14 developed trouble and never made it back to the carrier. John Bascom, ABC News at Arlington National Cemetery.
But in Milwaukee, happier news, a double birthday that may have been unique. Emma Dittmar and Marjorie Shearer met for the very first time at a reception where both of them celebrated their 100th birthday. They exchanged reminiscences, snacked on muffins and punch, and heard some of their younger friends sing to them. And those are the people and events that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Stu Chamberlain. I'm Lou Adler, ABC News, New York.
More Americans get their news from ABC than from any other source.